But first, in a piece he wrote for the Georgia Strait newspaper, our first guest stated, "We discount so much of what we claim to value in leaders and let our votes ride on the charlatans who beguile us with their humor, wit, and optical delusions. Ethics go out the window. Issues get buried under the carpet. Good sense gets abandoned. We rush to surrender to the scams that scream sucker as we quietly reassure ourselves that dishonesty is not so bad if it's couched as hyperbole." Joining us to talk about leadership is Martin Brown, longtime chief of staff to former Premier Gordon Campbell. Martin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Manny Mountie.
Now, with 11 months to go before the next provincial election, in your view, what are British Columbians looking for in a leader?
Well, I think fundamentally they're looking for a strong leader who takes decisive and emphatic actions and stance. You know, I think they're often drawn to charismatic personalities like Christy Clark. But, you know, I think the experience south of the border is like with Bernie Sanders and even, God forbid, Donald Trump, is that people are looking for people to take clear positions on items. You know, John Horgan often talks about Bernie Sanders as being an example. But, you know, to follow that example, you'd actually have to be, you know, black and white on many of the issues where British Columbians are pretty black and white on. Issues like LNG, you know, and saying we don't want here in the South Coast seven times the number of tankers going back and forth to Vancouver across the road. We actually don't want that. We want them to take emphatic action on housing and on the foreign ownership question that everybody's kind of dancing around at the margins. You're going to be talking about a minimum wage later this afternoon with somebody, yep. you know, that kind of thing. $15, you know, by 2020, like so many U.S. states and so many U.S. cities have done and committed to. Why wouldn't we do that? And that's what they want to hear. They don't want, we're going to study, we're going to think about it, we're going to dance around the edges of it. And that's where we're at right now, is John Horgan stands a huge opportunity, I think, to convince a lot of people that he's that strong leader, but he's going to have to be much, much more pointed in his policies and positions.
Which was the failing of Adrian Dix in the last election. Do you agree?
Yeah, I certainly do. Like I say in the essay or the article in the Georgia Strait, it's there in the Georgia Strait website if you go on and take a read through it. But basically, I argue that take the Kinder Morgan surprise, for example. This is where in the midst of the election campaign, Dix said, you know, that he was against the Kinder Morgan project. Well, I argue in the piece that he wasn't wrong to take that position. That's where most people, where most of his voters and supporters are at. That's certainly where I'm at. Where he was wrong was surprising people by taking a stance in the middle of the election that seemed inconsistent with his equivocating on the issue for the years prior. Where he was wrong was not in just driving that issue to the nth degree in advertising and making it a central campaign issue and looking apologetic about it. So that's a classic example. You know, the NDP right now, John Horgan now has come out and said that they're against the Kinder Morgan project, finally. Well, that's exactly the position that Dix argued, that actually even the Clark government has said it is against with its five conditions. Mm-hmm. But it's done it a bit apologetically. The NDP have kind of, you know, they quietly said that they are against it. They should be out there in Ottawa, like Gregor Robertson is, leading the charge. They shouldn't default to the federal party, to the local MP, and say, that's where the opposition's coming from. He should be at the front of the line saying, no bloody way, we don't want this project, it's not right for Vancouver, it's not right for the Georgia Strait and the South Island, and there are better ways that we can create jobs and economic activity than you know, investing in fossil fuel development.
In your piece in the Georgia Strait, which I recommend to everyone, if you just go on the Georgia Strait website, you can find it. It's titled "Looking for a Leader and in Search of John Horgan." Give me your assessment, Martin, of the pros and cons of Horgan's leadership.
Well, you know, I think one of the best things is that I refer to him as somebody who I think aspires to be a so-called post-partisan politician. One of these people who I really relate to since I've been out of politics. You really appreciate that so much of what gets in the way of good ideas and solutions is a rigid adherence to party ideologies and dogma that just makes enemies of people that should be talking to one another. So where he really is different is that he he's reaching across the aisle to people of all political persuasions and saying, look, I want to hear what you have to say. I'm open to your criticisms and your constructive suggestions, and perhaps we can find a meeting of the mind. So that's good. I think he's also good insofar as he's pragmatic. I think he's willing to say, you know, let's do the right thing, which is what we need in politicians, instead of let's do the politically popular thing always, which is, I think, what has driven this government utterly. On the downside, you know, I think his biggest challenge, he's got a challenge within his own party, of course, because, you know, he's got this cleavage that has always, you know, hindered the NDP between, you know, the so-called Browns, the people that favor resource development jobs on the right of their party, and then the people that the green element that basically, you know, is against many of the projects that are on the table right now, like the, you know, the North Pacific Northwest LNG project that the NDP has also kind of quietly come out against. So he's trying to reconcile those two streams. I think he's also challenged because Horgan's been in government. He knows that so many policy areas are not black and white; they're gray, and you got to be sensitive to that. So he tends to let his own experience sometimes get in the way of making sound and firm decisions, I think, that he really needs to make.
Horgan and the NDP being against a number of fossil fuel projects is an effort to define Horgan. Is it working?
Well, as my phone went off unexpectedly there, I said, Horgan should maybe really ask Surrey for some help here as to how to define Christy Clark, because she might have some better ideas than what they've had so far. You know, he is being defined, unfortunately, because he's partially allowing himself to play into that dynamic, and that's another main point in my argument, is he can't afford to fight the next election on Christy Clark's chosen battlefield, which is, you know, resource development, jobs, balanced budgets, and all the things that the Liberals typically point to. He's got to go to the NDP's core brand, which is what motivates their voters, and define himself and his party around the values, as he is quick to do, that motivate New Democrats and that motivate people that are in the middle, that are the great undecided masses who are looking to say, what do I want to vote for? And so, yeah, he's being defined as being against, you know, certain resource development. You know, the Kinder Morgan project is a case in point. They criticized the NDP and Adrian Dix for coming out against that. Just 13 days after the election, the Liberals took exactly the same position that Dix took, you know. The challenge is he shouldn't be apologetic when he says no. You know, he shouldn't just silently submit a letter to the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency saying the NDP is against the Pacific Northwest LNG project. It's right to be against that project that will create all sorts of greenhouse gases that will create very minimal long-term full-time jobs. And has all sorts of flaws. Where he should be emphatic is, this is my vision for economic development, and he hasn't been able to get that across yet. He's been spending more time apologizing for what he's not against and for what he is against than for actually saying what he's for and for defining Christy Clark. And that's the real challenge here. Always a contrast. Any election's always a referendum on the government in power, unless it becomes a referendum on the opposition. You know, people are motivated fundamentally by fear and anger and hope. And in the absence of any fear about the NDP, or in the absence of any anger at the Clark government, they're going to be looking to say, who offers the most hope? And that's where the NDP have to stand up and define themselves and say, yeah, we can have a clean, green economy. You know, I think Mayor Robertson's doing that a lot. You know, I think he's got to say, we can solve the housing crisis. Here's how. You know, let's emphatically go after absentee ownership and foreign investment that we don't want, you know, by restricting foreign investment, instead of these little half measures that allow him to say, you know, let's put a tax on foreign investment, which is a good thing, but allows the NDP, the Liberals, to say, well, you just want to raise taxes. That's what we thought about you all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These are the kinds of things that he just has to consistently, and the NDP consistently has to say, this is the party that you think we are, that we're about, And I'm the leader that is going to strongly take us forward with a hard, emphatic stance that moves us forward progressively, not keeps us in the same place that the BC Liberals are. And that was part of Dix's failing. He basically, you know, tried to offer the image of the NDP that was essentially a kinder, gentler BC Liberal Party. And that doesn't cut it.
Let's go to the couple of callers in the line here. First one is Ron. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Ian. My God, I never thought I'd say this about Martin Brown, but man, you got it nailed. I'm a longtime NDP supporter. Just as a very small personal example, I belong to a club which will remain nameless, and I've had some of these arguments with a certain fellow in there, and at the end of the day, because he's a tradesman and suffering from unemployment from now and then, he got really sort of tense and said, "Ron, it's about jobs." And, you know, that's the thing. At the end of the day, I think John Horgan kind of tied into this, you know, really, it's what we're all about. We want to look after our families, want to pay our bills, and a lot of other stuff just goes right over our head. You know, maybe good, green stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But the wolf at the door is what everybody's worried about.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you, Ron.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Next caller is another Ron. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I wondered what your guest thinks about the potential cabinet. I mean, John Horgan needs...
You got to win the election first, Ron, before we start talking about cabinet.
Does it or does it not help to have a strong team? And it seems to me that he does... I don't know, you know, what he would do here in terms of cabinet ministers, because he's got an embarrassment of riches on the South Island. In Vancouver, he's got people like George Heyman, David Deeby, Melanie Mark, etc. I mean, it seems to me that that adds credibility to a potential future government.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more, Ron. And I think actually this is one of the great unsung stories about the NDP right now, is they do have a very strong team of candidates. That's a credit largely to Dix's leadership in inviting those people in to run for him and to run again. But I think as well, the job that Horgan's done in keeping them together as a cohesive team, you know, when they do have very disparate views sometimes. But that's what you want, the cabinet table. Believe me, I sat and participated in cabinet discussions often for 10 years. And what you want is a diversity of experiences and opinions and positions and ideologies that are all there that inform decision making. And then you want strong people with good experience backgrounds to take them forward. And I think that's one thing Horgan is doing a good job at, is he's letting people like David Eby lead on housing. You know, most of the major issues that are getting most of the media coverage, if there's a problem for Horgan, it's that he's tending to let his critics lead and get the coverage too much at the expense of getting his own leadership across. But he does have a strong team, and I think that's evident in some of the critiques that you're hearing.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate your call. And surprisingly, we have another Ron, third Ron in a row.
The three Rons.
The three Ronnies.
Yeah. So what I was looking for in a candidate for, you know, for our premier, it's not so much their stance on a lot of different things, but it's just somebody I can trust. You know, it's like Christie and the Liberals, they've gone through their email scandal, just like, you know, you were mentioning, you know, God forbid Trump, well, God forbid Hillary or Bernie. You know, it's like, you know, you need somebody in there that has the ability to make the right decision, whether it's right or whether it goes against the political correctness or not. You know,
yeah, I couldn't agree more, Ron. You know, you need value, principle-based driven leaders that stick to their guns. And I think that's the thing. The thing that I think is troubling to some people about Horgan is on the one hand, he's come across to say, I'm the hard hat guy too, much like Christy Clark. I really used to wear one, and I know what that's like. And I want resource development jobs, because all the critics in the Victoria Press Gallery are saying that's what you got to stand up for the most. But then, you know, by the same token, he quietly says, well, we're against Kinder Morgan and we're against Pacific Northwest LNG. They're not incompatible, those positions, but he's got to be more, you know, dynamic in presenting his principled stance on both of them and stick to your guns. You know, when you say you're against Kinder Morgan, or when you're against the housing affordability crisis that Christy Clark is allowed to develop, say it loud and proud. You know, don't now back away from it. And even the LEAP manifesto that we've heard so much about, you know, I sure don't support a lot of it. But at its root, there's a lot that the NDP should be proud about talking about. You know, its commitment to social equality and income equality, and its commitment to a low carbon future and those kinds of things. You shouldn't be apologetic about that. You don't have to feel browbeaten just because a bunch of people say that, you know, if you're really smart, you'll run away from that stuff. People want to hear, no, I'm principled as an NDPer, and I'm willing to stand up, say what I like, say what I don't like, but then stick to my guns with what I know is right.
Yeah. Anything else, Ron?
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's also like when you know, like I'm 52. I've been voting for like 30 some odd years now.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice one time to have a politician that said one thing during the campaign and didn't do the opposite thing once they got into power. You can never count on them to actually go through with what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that your comment is why people are increasingly cynical towards politicians today. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. Martin, you worked for the Liberals for many years. Would you vote NDP in the next election?
I might well. It just depends on, like, as I say in the piece, I'm actually looking for a leader that stands for many of the things that that I believe in, and things that I've learned, you know, during my time in office and since. I think the Green Party, Andrew Weaver, they've done a very good job of putting forward some positions as well the challenge is that they're not going to form the next government. They may well elect some members, and as I wrote in my in a piece during the federal election campaign, there's a place for that, right? I do believe that we need those voices in the legislature to strongly stand up for those different and principled positions on the issues. But this contest, like most, is ultimately going to come down to who's going to form the next government, the NDP or the BC Liberals, and it doesn't leave you a lot of choice. You can sit on your hands, and I think that's the real risk, is if people don't get motivated to turn out in the polls, and that was the problem the last time around. It wasn't just people didn't vote, or the people voted for Christy Clark, is that a lot of people chose to stay home that might have voted for the NDP and for Adrian Dix because they just weren't motivated enough. So that's the worst of all worlds, is if people choose not to vote because they really aren't excited by the one choice, and because they really can't bring themselves to vote for the other party and candidate and leader. I'll look at the candidates here. I've got a very good MLA and Gary Holman in my backyard. There's a good Green candidate as well in Adam Olson and others. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Martin, always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ian.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's Martin Brown, Chief of Staff to former Premier Gordon Campbell. And you can read his, it's a lengthy piece in the Georgia Strait.